It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another episode of the Wealth Architect Podcast. So glad you're here. Today, we have the co-founder of Paradigm Shift Financial, not your average planner or financial planner. He firmly believes that when people discover their true purpose for money, they can utilize the Nobel Prize winning science of investing to make more meaningful, impactful financial decisions. So I look forward to unpacking that. Let's say hello to Thomas Blottenberger. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me.
What's going on today?
Well, you already know. Do you want me to share?
No, I know you're having some challenges, you know, with little things going on around the house, but I'm so glad you're here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got started and what you're, you know, why you have such a passion for helping people with their investing?
Yeah. So I've been in the industry now for, which is crazy to say, but 15 years. I started right out of college. I was one of the youngest CFPs in the state of Hawaii. I'm now in South Carolina, so way other side of the country. And probably the biggest, like, as a nugget, right, of what the difference I've noticed over that time frame, why I do what I do, is almost everybody is chasing money.
Yeah.
Almost everybody is trying to be better with money. Almost everybody is trying not to lose money. And yet, for the most part, people don't really have a clear direction or purpose or design around what it actually is for them.
Well, nobody's ever taught us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening, it's interesting, what ends up happening is when my drive is to get money and there's no greater purpose for it, then money becomes a source of survival. And no amount of money I end up with ever creates where I survive. And so that's why what I've always thought was weird in my practice was the people that had the most amount of money usually were the people that were the most miserable as far as just actual experience of life. And that's really the only thing I can attribute it to is a function of finally, you know, for most of us, it's when I get enough money, like my problems will be solved when I have enough. Yeah. And then there's a moment where you have enough and this problem still exists. Well, now what?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, there's people have a different, everybody has a different relationship to money, right? Some rely on it to survive. Some use it as a scorecard. Some use it as, you know, just the, you know, energy. There's all different kinds of ways to approach it. And I think what you're saying is that you got to bring some awareness to the way you approach it.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest flaws in our industry right now, you know, I believe people in our industry are inherently good and they want to make a difference for others. But probably one of the biggest flaws in the industry right now is we treat the decisions people make like they're math decisions. And they're not. Almost no one makes an actual math decision. They make emotional decisions. They make biased decisions. They make instincts, right? It's almost never the actual math. A real quick example of that. I was back in the early parts of my career before I started to really discover this. I was doing a budgeting work exercise with someone. And she had told me that she tried this stuff before and it never really worked. And I got kind of curious, well, what's there for you? Why hasn't it worked? What do you make it mean? And she goes, well, when I was a kid, my mom and dad got divorced and my mom had to work 3 jobs and I never saw her. And now that I'm married and I have kids, I want to spend all the money I've got on the, you know, opportunities and on events and just doing things with the kids so they never have to experience what she felt like. Well, what's a budget conversation going to do with that kind of a background conversation of or relationship to money?
Yeah.
It's not going to do anything.
So where do you go with something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. everybody's different. But the main thing there is everybody has a story. Now, the problem is when we relate to a story like the truth. And because if it's the truth, it's got us. There's no way to work around that. It's kind of like if I have it as the truth, that breaking a mirror will cost me or cause me 7 years of bad luck, right? Yeah. That is the truth. There's nothing that I can't see around that. I can't evaluate different perspectives. I'm stuck. So the moment I can disassociate and realize, oh no, wait, that's just a story. That's not the truth. It's something I made up. I now can choose something else. And in the choosing of something else, you'll have new actions show up.
Yeah, so true. And I really believe that life is a choice. Anything that you do in life, if you make a conscious choice, you are going to be at the whim and caprice of that choice. And that's for good or for bad. I think every choice in life or every decision in life has maintenance and consequences. Everyone, even the even the choice or the decision not to make a decision. So, you know, we are in control of our lives. We are in control of our choices. So we might as well be, you know, conscious of them, make good choices, knowing that there's going to be some repercussions on the other end. And hopefully they're pretty good, right? So how do you get people to kind of get steered in that direction where they're realizing, hey, wait, I'm in control of my financial life. I'm in control of my life. How do I make the right choices? What do you do? What are some action steps?
Well, when we're dealing with the psychology of people, right? And this is just, you know, your listeners could already start to use this themselves without a coach, is the first place is to start to notice your thinking. Become aware of how you think about things. Again, going back to that, it's the truth, right? Most of us have our thinking as the truth. And when you can start to become aware, like one of the most powerful questions I'll ask myself is, why did I think that? Or why do I think this? And when you do the looking at that, you can start to uncover, oh, there's a bias. Oh, there's a blind spot. There's something I didn't realize about how I think about things.
Yeah.
And that's the first step, because I think from some of the other guests you've had on the show and just what the show is about, you know, if I'm operating out of a scarcity mindset, the strategies I'm going to put in place are going to be different than the strategies I'd put in place if I'm operating out of an abundance mindset.
Right. So what are some strategies that we can start to apply if we're in that abundance mindset? Because I believe that, you know, if you have an abundance mindset, you crowd out the scarcity mindset. If you're always thinking about positive, it's hard to think negative. If you're always laughing, it's hard to cry. So if we start to focus on abundance, what are some of the things that we can focus on? Maybe even if we're just starting out to think about abundance, that can maybe move us in that direction a little bit further. What do you think?
I think the most important place when we're dealing with abundance for people is really looking at, let me ask you this, right? For most people, what is their greatest wealth generator?
Their income from their job, right?
Yeah. And so that's probably the first, well, not probably, that's almost always the first place to start to bring an abundance mindset. So when you look at, for example, budgeting doesn't have an abundance mindset by the design of it. It's dealing with, this is the parameter of my income. This is how much it's going to be. I'm not factoring in any growth to it. I'm dealing with past data, past numbers, past experience, and I'm not creating a plan to capture additional dollars as they come in. I'm just dealing with the current scenario, trying to not lose or not have all of it go out.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Like, you know, in budgeting does work for some people. Dave Ramsey has a whole program, right? So, I mean, there's people that it does work for.
It's just not exciting.
It's not exciting. And then it doesn't allow for life to show. Like, for example, let me give you an example, right? Let's say I actually implement a budget effectively and I'm saving $1,000 a month. And then I get a 20% pay raise. Is the first inclination to capture those extra dollars and put them to work for you? Or is the first inclination that, okay, great, I'm still saving $1,000. Let me spend the difference.
That's what most people do. They go out and buy something.
Yeah.
Or spend.
And it's, again, not a problem. It's not producing the results most people want.
Right.
And then there's the other aspect, which is budgeting is really against human nature. Really against human nature. Hey, you know what? Life is variable. Things happen that you can't expect or plan for or operate off of. But you know what? let me, you know, I can't stick to a diet. I went and had ice cream last night when I shouldn't have, but you know what? Let me make all my variable expenses planned.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what is funny? Cause you touched upon something that's really interesting. It's a pattern in humans, right? And it's certainly a pattern. We're patterns of our programming in this society, I think. Mm. So we're bombarded with thousands of messages every day of what to buy and who to be like and who to compare ourselves to. And, you know, who looks good, better than we do on social media and all those kinds of things. And so when we do start to crawl into a little bit of abundance, we increase our spending. You touched on it. And then when we increase it more, we increase our spending more. So we'll buy a bigger house because, oh, you know, why do we need a 3-bedroom house? We need a 4-bedroom house because we might have another kid. Let's go to a 5-bedroom house. Let's get a bigger garage and a nicer neighborhood with a gated community and a nicer car. And it just, we continue to increase our nut, our expenses. And we were doing just fine in the 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, you know, with the Chevy.
Yep.
And we don't need the Mercedes until we have a quantum leap. And this is what happens.
Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Happens is most people don't understand the concept of deferred gratification, right? Yep. So you save, and boom, then you can make a quantum leap. I remember reading a story about Robert Kiyosaki, the great author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and his wife, Kim Kiyosaki. And early on, they were having a conversation. And basically he said, you know what? I really want to buy a Ferrari. And she being the wise wife in this particular conversation, she said, great. What asset are you going to purchase such that the cash flow from the asset pays for the Ferrari?
Yep.
Like, oh, good point. So he had to go out and buy an apartment complex to pay for the Ferrari. And that's the deferred gratification. If we have some money built up, you're never going to save your way to wealth. But if you can save until you have enough money to take advantage of that opportunity, that's that quantum leap that you can have in finances. Do you agree with any or all of that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, So this is where psychology gets fun, right? Is we know that money can't make us happy. Like we fundamentally know that. And yet we spend most of our time chasing it.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, if we know money can't make us happy, why is it that we spend as much time looking for it and going for it and trying to create it? And there's this interesting concept. So pointing to what you just said, there's this interesting concept called the destructive cycle of wealth.
Yeah.
And how it works is, you know, so let me start off by saying there's nothing wrong with toys and cookies, right? There's nothing wrong with having stuff, right? And I'm not saying that it's an abundance mindset to limit lifestyle, but it is an abundance mindset to put it in the right perspective. So for most people, here's how the destructive cycle of wealth works, and see if you can find yourself in it. For most people, we're all born with a survivorship stress. We're all here looking to survive to some degree. So, and the basics getting met, food, shelter, water, and then even on a social level, right? The belonging, love, the experience of being with other people. There's a survival aspect to that. But we live in a society and a culture where it's not just survival. There's actually the next phase, next step, which is the wants. You know, we need a shelter to survive, but we want a 6-bedroom house, right? Now, what's interesting about our wants compared to other countries and other timeframes in the world is we can actually obtain most of what we want these days.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of capitalism. It's the beauty of entrepreneurship. It's people create products and we can actually get those things. So we obtain them. And then in the obtaining, there's momentary relief and exuberance. Oh my God. You know, for example, I just bought this new house. I'm like, oh my God, I love this house. This is great. And there's that relief and exuberance. But inevitably what happens is, as humans, we go to phase five, which is comparative analysis.
That's right.
And start comparing what I have to either a different version or a better version. And boom, I'm right back into survivorship stress. Oh man, you know, this isn't good enough anymore. I need more. I need to survive. So then the cycle continues. And as you add more money, like you just said, right? As you add more money, the lifestyle increases, but it usually doesn't increase out of abundance. It increases out of this cycle, and people get trapped in it.
Amazing. It's great when you break it down like you're doing, as you think about the psychology of money, because we don't sit down and think about psychology of money, because we just think money is something to spend or to use to buy groceries. So you started by talking about a couple of action steps. The first one was awareness. What are the next couple of action steps that people can take to get more toward that abundance mentality?
Yeah, well, so I guess probably, so awareness just in general, right? Look at how you're thinking. Another step is actually be like, don't kid yourself that you're inside of this destructive circle. Everybody is, right? It's just a function of being human. I do it with houses. I do it with cars. You do it with phones. That's why there's an iPhone 14 or 15 or whatever the new one is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So we all do it. Even sometimes, like, you know, life will throw curveballs and you try to minimize, you're still in the cycle. Actually, brief story about that. That's actually what I did. 2017, when I started this company, I went from making six figures of residual revenue selling from insurance sales that I made to zero income, because all of that stayed at the old firm. And so January 2018 rolls around and I don't have a check that I'm used to. And it really hits me of, oh my God, whoa, right? And so I had this really nice Lexus. I loved her. It was a burnt orange color. I named her Brown Sugar. And I was like, it's too expensive. Like the gas costs, I'm not making any money anymore. I got to be economical. I got to be smart. So I'm in the survivorship bias, right? I'm in the, I need to survive. I don't have money anymore. And I need to be smart about my decisions. I moved to wants. I want to get an economical car. I want to get a cheap car. I want to get something good. So I obtain a hybrid Kia Niro, 500 miles, you know, to a tank, $20,000 car. You know, top speed, like 80 miles an hour.
Right.
And so I'm feeling relief and exuberance. I'm like,
I've never heard of that car.
Yeah. I'm like, look at how smart I am. Look at how this was such a prudent decision. And then 2 months later, I park it next to a full-size SUV and I get out of it and I call my wife and I said, did you know that I bought a clown car? This thing is so small. And she goes, yeah, I hate it. I'm like, wait, you hate it? She was, yeah, I hate driving it. I can't believe that you bought it. And and I was right back into the survivorship stress. You know, so again, the other piece is to be aware that that's the case. Now, when we're talking about cash flow, right? The most powerful way, this is for anybody. This is for someone with tons of money, like you got tons of cash flow, or it's for someone with, you know, starting out, just trying to figure out how to manage cash flow. The most powerful thing that I've found that people can do. So, well, let's look at the problem first. People are conditioned. Money generally flows from any kind of income source. Will usually flow into a container that we have conditioned ourselves is spent from. So it'll usually flow into a bucket. Like, you know, let's just take an average W-2 for the time being, right? Just for simplicity of the conversation. Yeah. Money will flow from their paycheck into a checking account. And that checking account also is where all their bills already come from.
Yeah.
So they're psychologically conditioned that this account is to be spent from. So it actually feels like, if you look at the experience, there's actually an experience of robbing yourself when extra money comes into that account and you set it aside to not be spent. So one of the most powerful ways to hijack the brain and to work with the lizard brain that wants the immediate gratification is you separate out the holding tanks where the money flows in from income is separate from where money is spent from. And it has to move from one to the other. This account is the only one I spend from, but this account's the one that receives the income. So then I can regulate how much money actually, the conscious brain can now regulate how much money actually gets to the spending account. And I create guilt-free spending because that account's completely designed to be spent.
Yep. Wow.
And now if I have an income increase, I automatically capture it. And then I get to decide what I do with the extra versus just having it dissipate and going, oh, where did it go?
I mean, it's so fascinating when you dig into it and talk about the psychology of money. It really is cool because money is energy. It's stored value, stored energy. Well, listen, we could talk all about the psychology of money. I think you've given us some really good action items and tips and ways of thinking about things. I think really what I'm taking away from this conversation is that you've got to really sit and think about how you approach money. And a lot of it comes from your upbringing and the arguments your parents had at the dinner table, or they didn't talk about it at all. Maybe how you interacted it as you were growing up, and then how you've been interacting it maybe by habit and unconsciously since then. So how can people get a hold of you? What can you do for them? And where's a good resource that they can find to get a little bit more of Thomas Blottenberger?
Yeah, it's really great. LinkedIn is probably the easiest place. Okay. I'm becoming more tech savvy and using LinkedIn more effectively. So all they have to do is search Thomas Blottenberger on LinkedIn. I also give people my cell number. I don't know if that is appropriate for the show, but I don't mind. I like personal relationships. If someone heard this and sees the value of a possible coaching relationship or the possibility of just even having a conversation, I don't mind people having my actual personal contact information. So my cell number is 808-371-1273. And again, that's 808-371-1273.
That's a Hawaii area code.
That's the Hawaii area code. Yeah. I bounce around a lot.
Yeah. Cool. Great. Well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure just diving into how the brain works when it comes to money. And I look forward to maybe down the road doing this again. But thanks for being here, Thomas.
Yeah, if you'll have me again, first off, thank you for having me. But
yeah, my pleasure.
Secondly, not to plug it, but if you will have me again, we could spend another part of the show actually talking about the science of investing and how that works in alignment with the brain science that I just shared.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things to unpack there. So thanks again for being here. I appreciate it. And those of you who are listening and watching the Wealth Architect Podcast, thanks for being a part of us. And remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.